You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 3rd of June. I'm Simon Brown, coming to you live and loud from Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, Sasol flying Mediclinic up after what I thought were weak results, and Bidvest update, Adrian Saville on the perils of deflation, Jonathan Cherry on life after a pandemic. How do we make sure we get those changes that we're looking for? Some morning headlines: MoneyWeb, JC probes Capitec directors' share trading transactions, and from Business Day, Comair rescue plan expected to be rolling by March 2021. So still some way off there. Morning markets: the US S&P 500 was up 0.8 overnight, Nasdaq 0.6 overnight. Asia, green across the board. Sydney leading the way, up 1.4, with Tokyo up 1.6. Commodities, green oil strong again. Brent above $40 a barrel. We were talking with Viv yesterday. There's no holding back that oil. ZAR, 1709. And top 40 looking to call almost 1% higher this morning.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Rowan Williams, he's director at Nitrogen. 13 of the top 40 shares yesterday were up 5%. Rowan, a monster day on the markets. Leading the way was Sasol, up 16%, now at 117 Rand. How much is this fundamentals? How much is this the oil price? Perhaps just a short squeeze. Is Sasol a stock you're watching? Are you trading? Or are you just on the sidelines?
Yeah, that certainly has one that has caught investors' attention, and I guess the moves have been huge for such a big stock. Clearly, the oil price having a positive impact and sentiment improving there. I think, obviously, the concerns about liquidity abating and the ability to raise money at a higher oil price obviously gets easier. So I guess more equity in the stock as a result, and that combined with, obviously, improved risk sentiment generally. As soon as stock moves up significantly, we've been on the sidelines. I think we'd have been concerned about the balance sheet and the need to raise capital and the dilutive impact. So we have been, just spectators so far.
Yeah, spectating myself also from the sidelines. I suppose with oil higher and maybe a better sort of global sentiment, they can perhaps get some asset sales, they can get better income for oil. Perhaps that rights issue's off the table or reduced. I mean, management did say rights issue was their last port of call and were hoping they wouldn't have to go that way.
Yeah, and I think that really has been the last impetus for the share price move, is if they don't have to raise the capital through the rights issue, that removes the significant overhang, the need for investors, obviously, to stump up more capital for their investment. And so it allows the share to go higher. And I guess you get these positive dynamics, as you mentioned. I think there have been shorts, and they need to get out of the way as well. So all these things feed on themselves. But what I think we will see is, as the sort of ebbs and flow with the market and news and, I guess, the oil price, the share will remain volatile. And they'll be profit taking and trading as well.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail there. Volatility is assured there. The Bidvest update yesterday, lots there. Comair stake being written down to zero, no surprise. Hidden in there was a little nugget. They obviously have a stake in Adcock Ingram. They said lots of nice things about Adcock, and the stock had a decent day, although relatively less than much of the market, up almost 5%. We saw it with Aspen as well, sort of the medical drug companies rather than hospitals, sitting on decent valuations and actually perhaps looking attractive. Is Adcock Ingram or perhaps Aspen sort of stocks that you guys are looking at Nitrogen?
I think, as you point out, the commentary on Adcock was fairly positive. Obviously, there's still good demand leading up to lockdown, and people looking for the types of medicines and vitamins that they produce. And I guess Aspen has also seen a pickup of demand, particularly from Europe, through the results of the pandemic. So we certainly have been monitoring them. I think the concern we have more for Adcock is medium term, the consumer environment is going to be impacted and demand is going to be very muted. So while they may have seen a short-term pickup, which we've seen in a lot of these retail-type stocks, it's very short-lived. And in fact, post the lockdown, demand has dropped significantly. So it remains to be seen, but we're just concerned that the consumers will be under pressure for some time. And so, again, we just watching quietly for now.
Yeah, fair point. I mean, Adcock does a lot of the sort of over-the-counter type drugs. Perhaps that demand disappears. Mediclinic International results yesterday. Everyone's saying to me, how come losses increased, write-downs increased, yet the stock was certainly looking a lot stronger, up 8% on the day. What did you make of those Mediclinic numbers and the market's response to them?
Yeah, I was quite surprised by the significant positive move in the share price. So as you pointed out, they impaired, particularly was a little bit in Switzerland, but the assets in Abu Dhabi or UAE, which had a significant impact on the earnings. But I guess the sort of normalized earnings, were slightly below expectation that they'd set previously, I guess, given the current environment, were credible. And I think where the market took rather positive from the results was two things. There was good cash generation for the period, which sort of makes sense. If the business slows a little bit towards the end, it can actually release a bit of cash. But they withheld the dividend and, I guess, are sort of protecting the balance sheet. So there have been some liquidity concerns there. So those, I think, were addressed by the results. And then the demand side, particularly in Switzerland, looks like it's returning back to normal. They had a very difficult April, but they're saying May looks better. But it's hard to tell, obviously. You know, one swallow does not make a summer. So it's hard to tell where the demand, I guess, will rest post COVID, and even in a lockdown or partial lockdown environment like South Africa, their demand is still significantly less than it has been. So it remains to be seen as sort of an unfolding story. But I think the market sees a quality asset, maybe looking through the cycle at the earnings. They did say COVID's going to weigh on the demand for at least the next 12 months. So the market's got to be looking towards the future.
Yeah, and you make a great point, cash flow. And I think in this environment, cash is king. And if they're picking up on the cash flow, that's actually a good thing to see in a tough conditions. That's Rowan Williams, Director at Nitrogen. Appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
In chatting with Dr. Adrian Saville, he's founder and CE at Cannon Asset Management, I want to talk deflation. In essence, prices falling. That sounds great. Adrian, morning, appreciate your time. The problem with deflation is it can impact demand, particularly big ticket items. If I want to buy a new lens for my camera, for example, and I think it's going to be cheaper in a year, I'm going to hold off buying, and suddenly we become a nation of savers, which is great, but it does mean that demand is poor. So there's actually a negative to the concept of deflation.
Absolutely right, Simon. There's a few aspects that you need to give attention to. The one is, as you obviously point out, is big ticket items. That if you're going to buy a car, a house, a flat screen television, and you think the price is going to be X% lower in 12 months' time, then you hold off and you defer your consumption. And there might be a spin-off in that it turns a nation into savers rather than consumers. But there's other aspects that quickly join this complication of deferred consumption. Two of the very obvious ones are credit agreements, where if you imagine we've set all of our agreements in a world in which there is inflation and positive interest rates, and we then move into a world of negative inflation. Your bank has lent you X 100 against your home loan, and house prices start falling. Suddenly, after early servicing of your home loan, you've serviced your debt of 100. But the house is now worth 80 and 50 and 60. And if you've got dramatic falls in prices, you can land up with real problems in the credit system, in the banking system. The other is, imagine you and I sitting down for our wage negotiation and we have to discuss how big your decrease is going to be.
I hadn't thought of that one. I mean, you scared me with the credit agreement, and then you wanted to cut my salary. In the short term, it is great. And the problem is that we understand, you know, conceptually, how do we fight the inflation? Sorry, I'm still thinking about you wanting to cut my salary. Yeah, we get the, you know, typically you drop interest rates. That's the plan, right? You put cash into the market. Problem, firstly, Japan's been doing it for 2 decades plus, little success. But world over, we don't have wiggle room to drop rates. Even in South Africa, our rates are, sure, they're still positive, but they're at sort of, you know, 50, 60 years lows. If we start to see deflation, we just don't have the tools to fight it at this point.
Yeah, and you know, this is why Japan, amongst others, has been so determined to try and get inflation into the system. Because if you've got an interest rate, rather, of 0%, if you've got an interest rate of 0%, and prices are falling, you've actually got a real interest rate. You've got a positive interest rate. But if you've got an interest rate of zero and you've got inflation of 5%, then you've actually got a negative interest rate of minus 5%. So Japan is furiously and very determinedly trying to get inflation into their system because it's difficult to take interest rates anywhere below zero. You can work at the margin through central banks, but it's technical and it's not really going to be a big needle mover. So the policy tool that you've got then is inflation. And aside from the impacts on credit agreements, deferred consumption, employment agreements, it also challenges your policy environment in that the inflation rate determines what the interest rate looks like if it's negative. And if you want an interest rate to be stimulatory, you actually need positive inflation.
Yeah, that's a great point. We actually need to see some inflation. Locally, our CPI, which was due last week, got delayed due to some, they just couldn't do it during lockdown. But even that is expected to come in at the low end of our range. Our Reserve Bank still has some wiggle room, but our interest rates are low. We're not at that zero point yet. But the governor and the MPC are certainly going to be watching that CPI when it comes out. The governor wants 4.5. We're probably going to come out closer to 3, 3.5.
There's a very good chance that inflation falls through the bottom of the 3 to 6% tunnel. We've already seen producer price inflation out recently, which is a lead indicator. You know, producer prices are measured at the factory gate and at the farm gate. And so they're an indication of what's coming down the line at you in terms of consumer price inflation. And that number is already very subdued. South Africa has had one or two pockets of exceptionally low inflation, but it's never looked like it's structural, you know, by which we mean it's going to stay in the system. Europe, Japan sit with this very low structural rate, and there is a risk that South Africa moves into this zero or falling price environment in a very, very subdued economy. You know, that's one of the attributes of depression economies.
Yeah, I got to say, I mean, my memory of inflation is high inflation, this low inflation.
Yeah, 20%.
Yeah, this is different and weird. Loving it, but risks are there. That's Dr. Adrian Saville, founder and CE of Canon Asset Management. Adrian, really appreciate your time this morning.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now
with Simon Brown
on The Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jonathan Cherry. He's from Cherry Flavor. Want to talk what's our future going to look like? Everyone's saying it's going to be different after the pandemic. No one disagrees with that. Jonathan, morning. Appreciate your time. One of the things that keeps coming back to me is that we as a society need to conceptualize what we want it to look like post-pandemic, and we need to start working towards that new future rather than just sort of let it randomly happen. We need to take charge.
Morning, Simon. Yeah, absolutely. I think as a futurist, we believe that you create the future that you prefer. So I think there are a number of forces of change that are acting on all businesses around the world. But it is about seeing, not necessarily about, you know, letting those forces affect you in a negative way. It's about seeing how things in the contextual environment are shifting and how you can play into that in order to unlock the opportunity that exists.
And I mean, things are always changing. You know, it's, nothing is ever static. The world is dynamic. What we are seeing is just that acceleration of it, just that acceleration of the opportunity. The huge one is work from home. And it's those further implications. The work from home trend, which is to some degree going to remain entrenched, that suddenly has implications around managing families, around your boss, around childcare, around where you live, transportation. It's not just that you now need to put a desk in your living room. The implications become significant and ripple across society.
Yeah, and isn't that an interesting thing? You know, we can talk about work from home and say, yes, it's something which has shifted, but the real shift is going to happen inside people's minds. It's the mindset shift as to, you know, this is the way work used to be, and now all of a sudden, overnight, it has radically transformed. And we've been talking about the future of work for as long as I can remember. People have been speculating about how technology is going to influence the way that we work. But now, within a period of 2 months, the world has changed. And I think the interesting thing is that the psychology of people now also needs to shift. We need to understand how technology can be a part of our lives, but not something that rules us. How can we use it to leverage our work life so that we can work with the institutions that are locally. But now, you know, just for myself, the work from home paradigm has opened up my client base to the rest of the world, which was never really the case. But now all of that opportunity has been unlocked. But the challenge is, exactly as you say, how do I balance the fact that the kids are at home? How do I balance the fact that I now need a home office that needs to be fully digitized into that space? So I think a lot of work needs to be done by individuals to reframe the way that they see work, reframe the way that they see business in this post-pandemic reality.
Yeah, and you talk about this for a long time. I read a book, Sovereign Individual. It was 1997. I hauled it out last night. I actually thought I'd read it in the 80s, but it turned out it was late 90s. They talked around this trend. You talk around, you know, technology not ruling us and sort of taking control of that process, as I said up front. It's difficult for us as individuals. And I don't want to go to the, you know, we're rats on the treadmill, but you know, it is a case of we kind of, our lives almost happen to us, and it's difficult for us as individuals to now take that charge and to say, well, how do I want it to look? What am I going to do? You know, perhaps it's experiences more than assets. It's going to be a difficult a time for us emotionally and psychologically.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the work that futurists do. What we tend to do is that, yes, there is empirical evidence as to how change is manifesting, but a lot of the work that we do is very much about thinking creatively about the future. What kind of future do you really want to build for yourself? And this isn't just for individuals and organizations. It also is a valid exercise for countries to do. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, this is a great opportunity for a country like South Africa to say, before this thing happened, the economy was not necessarily working for everybody. How can we use this opportunity to really imagine the future that we want and then work backwards from there to try and see what is the bridge between now and there and start putting action plans in place to create that? And part of that is to say technology and digitization is a wonderful way to leverage the work that you do. But in a preferred future, you do not necessarily want to be a rat on the wheel. You want to use technology to help you. It needs to be an assistance to the work that you do. But you have to take charge to make sure that you design that preferable future from scratch. You need to do it from now. You're not just you're not powerless in the progress of the future. That's what we always say. So I think it's important that people spend some time in actually understanding that you can design the future that you want and do that quite proactively now.
I love that idea. Let's think about that future. Let's think about that inclusive future for a country, and then let's work backwards from that point and get to where we are now. And I think it's something that all South Africans need to be thinking around, and truthfully, everyone around the world. That's Jonathan Cherry. You find him at Cherry Flavor. Really appreciate the time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every morning, 6:30 at moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app. Podcast and all good podcast catchers available from 7 a.m. and also on the MoneyWeb website and app. Chat to us on the social medias, hashtag MoneyWebNow. My thanks to you for listening. My guests, producer Cordora, sound Boffinetti. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow morning.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.